Hi, and welcome to the American Midwife Series. I'm your host, Angelica Malone. This podcast is a listen-in on the conversations I have with midwives about the work they do and the people they serve. This episode is the first in a series of interviews that I'll have with midwives across the United States and its territories. If you know of a midwife, or you are a midwife, that I should interview here on the American Midwife Series, please email me at hello@angelicamalone.com. Today I'm chatting with Meredith Broadway, a licensed midwife and owner of Birth and Wellness Center of Arlington. Meredith and I met about a year ago when she was living just outside Seattle and completing her midwifery training. I love Meredith because she's real and down to earth. Whenever I have questions about midwifery or why something is the way it is among midwives, she shoots straight with me. I love that about her. In today's episode, I'll be asking Meredith what it's like to apprentice in both Texas and Washington, the biggest lessons she's learned as a midwife, how she managed to find, renovate, and open a birth center in less than a year. I'll also ask her to share what her greatest hurdles have been along the way. Listen in. Hey, Meredith.
Hey.
We got it to work.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Okay, good. Let's just get in and start chatting.
Sweet.
Okay, tell everybody who you are. You can do the basics.
My name is Meredith Broadway. I'm a midwife in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. I am opening a birth center in Arlington, which is central to Dallas and Fort Worth. I've been a midwife. Well, I've been licensed in Texas since September. My last birth as a student was in December of 2017 in Washington. Yeah.
Awesome.
What else?
That's good stuff. Give us a little bit of background. Like, how did you come to midwifery?
Well, I started, my first birth experience was out of hospital as a photographer. I was actually pursuing nursing at that point. So, I wanted to work in nursing with labor and delivery at that, like, I wanted to be in the birth world, I guess I knew at that point. I moved from oncology, which is cancer, to labor and delivery in the hospital. And I just really realized that that wasn't the place that I wanted to be. Like, I totally see a point in hospital birth, and I don't want to sound like I'm anti-hospital birth, but that wasn't the end of birth that I wanted to be at. And so then I started pursuing out of hospital birth.
Were you a nurse there? What were you doing? Like, what was your role when you were in the hospital?
My title was unit coordinator. So I was doing like a grow your own program where they were going to pay for nursing school. And then I was going to be contracted with them for several years after I graduated. And that was a really big hesitancy already.
Like feeling tied to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not a great hospital to be in. So I already was hesitant about that. And then just seeing how it worked, you know, the nurses are only able to be with their patients for 12 hours. And then if the birth hasn't happened, then they don't get to experience that, and they don't really, they're only invested for 12 hours. And that was one drawback for me.
So you were a photographer. You did your first out of hospital birth. Were you like doing photography for a friend? Was it like a business?
My first birth was with my cousin. So yeah, I was in photography outside of birth. And she had asked me to come photograph her birth. And then I photographed another few births for friends. And yeah, it was always people that I knew as a photographer for birth. But yeah.
And what did you think after your first birth as a photographer?
It was really cool. I don't know. I mean,
cool. Sign me up. I'll go to
midwifery. Right. That's it. Here's the rest of my life. No, I don't really feel like I was that impacted, to be honest. I mean, it was really awesome, but at the same time, like full time, I was working with people that were dying. And so I think the emotion behind birth, it didn't feel intense to me because I was already feeling really intense things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely. So, like, I think for some, when they go to birth, it's their first time like brushing that kind of threshold between the worlds, but you were already living there. And so it was just like the other end of it. It's like, oh yeah, this is awesome too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it wasn't like this big, like, oh my gosh, birth is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I chose midwifery because, and the same reason that I was in oncology really is because I really want to support people when they're at their most vulnerable and, in a protective kind of way. And so, that was, I could see that element in it, even at that birth. It was her first baby and it was really long and we pushed for a long time and, you know, I could see that. And so I knew in that birth that that was another avenue for me to support people in the way that I wanted to support them.
Yeah. I like that you came to midwifery with this really healthy perspective and it wasn't just exciting. You know, obviously it's really important that birth is exciting to you if you're going to be a midwife and going there at 2 a.m., you know, to watch somebody push for
it's got to keep you awake.
Right. Got to keep your attention. But I like that you came to it realizing that it wasn't just the excitement, you know.
It was
something deeper than that. Okay, so tell me about your pathway. Like, what training program did you choose? Mm-hmm. All of that. What was the training like? I know you did training both in Texas and Washington, so maybe take us way back.
Well, I didn't really know how to become a midwife. I actually reached out to the student that was at one of the births who was then a midwife and owned a birth center. And so I reached out to her to talk to her about just the process. And so really I pursued the process that she pursued because that was all I knew, which was the PEP process with a distance learning didactic portion as well. Which the PEP process is the portfolio evaluation process. And so a lot of states, I know Washington, they don't recognize that as a pathway to licensure. And so you can become nationally licensed that way, but there aren't, not all states acknowledge that process. So
licensed here in Washington?
I could if I did. There's a bridge program, which I have all the hours for that. So it would take extra testing. Just each state has its own testing. And so I only tested to be licensed in Texas for now. I knew that this is where I wanted to be. And so, so I could become licensed in Washington. I couldn't just walk in there right now. I don't have a state license for Washington right now, but yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I wanted to just to break that down a little bit more.
Because
I think that that's something that is really important to realize. Like if you're taking a certain pathway to becoming a licensed midwife or to becoming a CPM, and then you want licensure in the state that you're planning to practice or whatever, you know, you want to make sure that the pathway that you've taken leads to what you're wanting.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I just followed the steps that she was in, and I joined the same school. I became a student at the same school that she went through.
Do you want to share the school name or no?
Yeah, it was Mercy in Action. So they actually have a BEAC accredited program now. When I started, they didn't. And so about halfway through, they became MEEC accredited, which is the schools that Washington State specifically looks for. That's the accreditation that they're looking for their state licensure. And so it was cool. I they have a program that they're developing currently that's basically a bridge from where I'm at right now to where the MEEC accredited program is.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also a bridge program through NARM. So anyway, about a year and a half in, 2 years in, I made the move from Texas to Washington, completely separate from midwifery school. I moved my life across the country and got a job at a birth center as a birth assistant and didn't really know what I was going to do. I mean, I knew I was going to be a midwife, but I didn't know how I was going to finish. And the first birth that I did there as an assistant, I met my preceptor and we really hit it off and it was really great. And from there, I think I actually only assisted like one or two more births at that birth center. I wound up not pursuing that and just becoming her student. And we did the rest of my births as a student were actually home births. So that was cool. Yeah. So she actually taught me like a completely different aspect of midwifery. She graduated, she's her master's from Bastyr and, you know, she's licensed in Washington and there, it's just a completely different culture, of midwifery in Washington versus Texas. And so I feel like my knowledge is pretty well-rounded, as far as the experiences that I had in both places.
Tell me a bit about the differences. That's something I'm really curious about. We've talked about a bit, but mm-hmm. I want you just to share, like, be candid, like, what are the differences or, you know, what can you say is different between the two or what is the same, you know?
Yeah.
What are the things did you like? Which things did you dislike?
Yeah. There's not really a ton that's the same. So, like,
ooh,
birth.
Really?
Birth is the same. Yeah, like...
Babies come out of vaginas.
Yeah, babies come out of vaginas in both states.
Check.
So that's cool. You know, the birth process is the same. But the... And, I mean, the intention for the model of care is the same. I think the biggest differences are related to the restriction and the standard of I don't want to say education because that makes it sound like midwives in Texas, you know, aren't educated, and that's not true. But my preceptor in Washington did say, like, one of the first times that we talked, she was like, "You're going to know why they call us the midwives." And it's true. Like, I did learn a lot more about the medical side, which was valuable to me, you know, coming out of hospital birth. I saw, you know, what happens when everything goes wrong. And so I have both aspects of experience. And here it's in Texas, it's more, we aren't in network with insurance. We can become in network with Medicaid, which is the state insurance program. And the facilities, like the birth center, could become in network with insurance, but CPMs as a whole, the majority, we aren't in network with insurance. And so in Washington, it's pretty standard that they are in network with insurance. And so that opens up like a completely different culture for midwifery. Like, insurance really is dictating the cultures in that regard. And so in Texas, it's really only available to people that can pay cash. And so I would say it's mostly middle to upper class people that are having out of hospital births here.
Mm-hmm.
99%, I feel like, I mean, at least in my experience. And then in Washington, all of our clients were state insurance. And so it was different in that way. And then also just being in network with insurance, you know, they're dictating everything you're doing, even down to the verbiage in your chart. And so here, I feel like there's a lot more autonomy. In Texas. But then it's also like, you know, the scope is different in Washington because their standard is higher. They're able to do more. And here, you know, I was talking to a doctor this morning about how some of the drugs that midwives in Washington, like they're in scope there for midwives to use, aren't here. And so anyway, it's just completely different. It feels completely different. I mean, birth is still the same, obviously, but the lifestyle of midwifery is different. When you're in network with insurance, if you transfer to the hospital, you don't get paid. And here, you know, if you transfer to the hospital, you go with a client and you still get paid because they paid you the cash price and you're still attending their birth and they're still getting all of the care that they would have regardless of where their birth is. But in Washington, it's, you know, you're not getting paid. So it's different anyway.
Wow. That's really significant.
Yeah, it is.
I thought you were going to share more like cultural, just societal stuff, which obviously is probably different too, but that right there alone.
I think it major. Causes, I feel like it causes the societal differences. Like, I mean, of course there's like, you know, the Southern culture and all that. And just culturally here, we're in the ultra conservative land and, you know, and Seattle and the, you know, outskirts of Seattle, King County, whatever, it's not. But I feel like that's kind of the face of midwifery. That's the big difference is how you become licensed, what the standard is. Because there are people, I mean, if we're being completely honest, there are people that are meeting the standards in Texas that don't know what they should know as a healthcare provider. And so that does make a big difference. There aren't a lot. I mean, I feel like most midwives I know in DFW are passing the standards here. Like they're really reaching above and beyond because they see the value in doing better than what we're required to do. But you don't come across that in Washington because it's harder to become licensed there.
Man, I guess like, so one of the things I think about as I'm pursuing my path to becoming a midwife is just how I came to midwifery was wanting to be a part of a profession that was very autonomous, you know, and obviously there are boundaries for everything. But when you share that, it's like, wow, with that autonomy, like if you choose a state where you might have more autonomy, you know, are you able to serve the people you want to serve? Or do you have the respect that you want to have among healthcare professionals? Are your peers, you know, holding themselves to this similar high standard that you might be holding yourself to? Just so many you know, little things come to my mind when you say that.
I mean, true autonomy, like you're gonna have to be in the jungle somewhere and not dictated by any person at all. But, you know, but like I do think, like I was having that conversation today too about how doctors, even if they wanted to do the things that we do, they can't because their hands are tied.
And hospital policy and insurance and malpractice, right? And things like that.
So I do feel like I'm able to be as autonomous as possible while also living in an industrialized world, but, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. So how many midwives are in your area, like in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, would you say? Like licensed midwives, or maybe even do you have any CNMs doing ad hoc birth there?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh gosh. To my knowledge, CNMs, there's probably 15 to 20.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like an exact number off the top of my head. I would say I can think of 12 to 15 that I know, you know, personally or whatever. Professionally, I guess I should say. CPMs, I have no idea. I mean, I know the North Texas Midwives Facebook group has 90 people in it or something, but
oh my goodness.
I don't think they're all practicing, no. Oh, okay. Like, I think it's not just, so I don't know. I mean, at least 50. Okay.
Wow. So
in DFW. Yeah.
Do you feel like you're in community with the midwives there? Is it, what's the dynamic? No. No.
I'm done trying to sugarcoat
yeah.
that.
What's the dynamic like? Tell me. I don't know. I'm a student. I only know the dynamic that I experience among my cohort mates and then the midwives that come mm-hmm. and teach us. So there in your area, what would you describe yeah. as the dynamic among the midwives?
It's very different than in Washington. In Washington, there wasn't... everyone wanted to support everyone, and you know, in my experience in Washington, there's, you know, the midwife in town and the midwife in the next town over, and I'm talking kind of rural areas, but there wasn't any kind of animosity or like territorial type attitude. Everybody just wanted to support each other, and there wasn't even like a, in my experience, there wasn't even like a who's getting which clients, or I don't know, there it was more community. And here it's really the opposite of that. You know, I'm opening a birth center that's in central of, it's really in the center of DFW. And I think the closest birth center to me, well, there's one that's not too far. It's about 10 to 15 minutes. And they're actually like the people that I've heard are pretty happy for us and excited. Like there's, from what I hear, no one reaches out to me. I just hear everything. And so my preceptor here, which is the midwife that trained me while I was in Texas, she owns a birth center that's about 30 minutes from us, and they're really supportive. They're the only people that have reached out to be supportive though. And, you know, I've had people reach out and be the opposite of supportive, and then everything I've heard has not been supportive. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I feel like it's a territorial thing. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, people just, it's a business, you know, the business mentality of, you gotta kill to eat. Isn't that the saying?
I guess. I don't know who heard of that, but I guess that makes sense.
That might be a Texas thing.
That sounds like a Texas thing.
Should I say it with the thick accent? No. Anyway, I think it's just that. And
do you think it has something to do with the fact that, you know, you're kind of not battling, but you're trying to get people to pay for your service, and it's not. Like, I don't know what the birth culture is like. Like, is it really popular among a certain group of people to have out-of-hospital birth? Like, is that a limited community where it feels kind of...
It's definitely on the rise here. And I feel like the culture, the birth world in the out-of-hospital birth world in Seattle was pretty oversaturated, but they had the mentality of there's enough pregnant people to go around. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a million midwives in Seattle. Like, I can't even tell you how many midwives there are there at all. I can't begin to even mm-hmm. guess. And so it's not like a, it's just not the same. And there are less people using midwives here than there are in Seattle, but it's definitely on the rise. I think that a lot of the pushback I get is because I'm setting things up differently, because it really is only accessible to people that have money here. And I don't feel like that's what I'm wanting. Mm-hmm. And I've set up my business to be accessible to people that don't have money. And so if they have Medicaid, then I take them. And I'm working on getting a network with Medicaid right now, and not a lot of people are willing to do mm-hmm. that, because you don't get paid very much. And but I've set it up to be, it's structured, but it's discounted, and I think that that intimidates people. Yeah. I'm doing things that other people aren't willing to do, and I think that they're worried that that's going to lower their value. Mm-hmm. And but the reality is that it's structured, and that it's not everyone. It's not, oh, well, you don't want to pay, so you don't have to pay. It's, oh, you can't pay.
Yeah.
And I don't think people are getting that, but maybe they would if they talked to me.
So what's the cost for an out of pocket, if you were to pay for birth there mm-hmm. in that community?
I would say that the standard rate right now for a birth center birth is going to be $6,000. Okay. So that's including midwifery fee and facility fee in most places.
Okay, so that's prenatal, the actual birth itself, and the whatever number of mm-hmm. postpartum visits the midwife. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about the people that you serve, or that you're wanting to serve.
Well, Texas has the highest rate of maternal mortality in the industrialized world. And so that was one of the reasons I moved back here. And a lot of that is linked with systemic racism. And so I'm really aiming at bridging that gap in whatever way I can. And so and a lot of that isn't linked with socioeconomic status. Yeah. So
I think that's important to recognize.
Yeah, the assumption is that it is, and really it's not. It's just that people aren't being listened to, and other things too. But that's the biggest thing. I mean, Serena Williams' story about how she has that coagulation disorder, yeah. and her nurses weren't listening to her, even though she's Serena exactly. Williams. So
who else do you have to be to get someone to listen to you?
Right. I guess maybe Michelle Obama. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so that's my big thing. That's my big push right now, is like, I'm really trying to make it, I want everything to be equitable, and I think that everybody needs to have an equal opportunity, regardless of how much money they have and what ethnicity they are, and, you know, anything, what religion they are, what their identity is mm-hmm. in any form. And so I'm trying to foster a judgment-free atmosphere, which I feel like is super cliche, but really that's, I'm just trying to be real with people, and I want them to feel like they can be real building. And so far I feel like I'm getting that as really strong feedback, is just that people could show up and say whatever they need to say and get the care that they need.
Yeah. I think that when it comes from a genuine place, it translates, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think you can say a lot of stuff out of your mouth, not you specifically, mm-hmm. but anyone can mm-hmm. say something out of their mouth. But it's mm-hmm. your actions that speak, you know, and people mm-hmm. who may have felt like they weren't being heard or, you know, are in a vulnerable situation, they're used to people saying things out of their mouth mm-hmm. or putting up a sign, mm-hmm. but they know the, mm-hmm. the feeling of when someone is genuine yeah. and honest. So,
and a lot of people are telling me, the people that are supportive in my life are saying, you know, that's why people are intimidated, is because they want to be able to say that they're doing these things and not have to actually do them. And, and I'm like, hey, guys, I know that we're all talking about racism, but we're also like the leading number of people that are dying. So
so tell me about the midwives that are working at your practice.
One of them has been a midwife for over 10 years. She's practiced in different countries. She's very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them is, she's younger, but she's been a midwife longer than me. And she is the founder of a nonprofit that also is, motivated by the maternal mortality rates, and their goal is to open an easy access clinic, so that's cool. And they're kind of following the Jenny Joseph model.
Oh yeah, the JJ way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're working on that, and she's also, you know, a midwife to support herself too. So she has like her practice and also her nonprofit going.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have, so this is like a kind of side note question. because, and I have to say this just because, and we've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
When you desire to serve more people of color, we did say that, you know, we want to make sure that it's not just, we're not stereotyping like all people from mm-hmm. this ethnicity or having this experience or this person mm-hmm. people in this socioeconomic status. But the question I was going to ask is, how many midwives of color do you know of in that area that you're in, Dallas, Houston, or excuse me, Dallas and, or whatever area?
Currently licensed, I think I know of two.
Okay.
And then there's several students. I think a couple of them are senior level students that are women of color.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot. And that was one of the things. I was on a podcast a few weeks ago, and that was one thing they asked me, is like, if people of color want to see people of color, like, what are you doing? Because you're white. Not, they didn't word it like that, but like, really, that's, yeah. You know, it's, I am white, so I wasn't offended at all. But I'm trying to bring in birth workers of color to the building and facilitating a place for them to come see their people, and just creating a diverse, like, we have a childbirth education series that I'm really excited about. And the two women that talk about labor and breastfeeding are white. And then there's one woman of color that comes in and talks about nutrition and fitness. And then there's one that comes and talks about postpartum support and postpartum planning and what postpartum is actually like. And so I'm really trying to make it diverse. And, you know, like, we're having a massage therapist come in. She's a woman of color. Like, it's just different.
You're doing the work. You're getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard, especially if they're not there. You know, you're not seeing
right.
them.
Yeah.
But you're doing the work of reaching out and finding them and building connection and stuff like that, which is really important. And I think, again, people will recognize your genuineness, and hopefully that will attract mm-hmm. more birth workers and midwives, specifically of color and Black mm-hmm. midwives. To your practice, you know, to collaborate mm-hmm. with you or work with you, or even use as a referral system, that would be wonderful too. So those two that yeah. you know of, or maybe the students that are coming up, that would be a really good way to connect. But yeah,
yeah.
It's important that you're already thinking about it and that you realize, and obviously the person on the podcast mentioned it, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, and the biggest thing is that it takes time, you know. Absolutely. Like I'm not at all expecting anyone to come in and just trust me right off the bat, especially if they're traumatized. Like, you know, like it's not just because my website says that I'm aware that racism is a thing. Like,
yeah.
And you know, that's one thing that you and I have talked about before is, you're the person that I get to bounce off my, hey, I'm white, help me not be ignorant type thoughts. Yeah. And so, you know, what you said the last time we had coffee over Christmas was, how I'm going to know that you're diverse is when I run into you in public and you're not out with just a group of white people. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you can say that's I'm basically summarizing what you
yeah,
said.
No, you...
I'm just, go ahead, yeah. And I said that on the podcast. You have to go back and listen.
Okay, so anyone who you know who hasn't heard the podcast that she's referring to, I haven't listened to it either. But what I pretty much said to Meredith is like I hear white people say constantly, like you know, I want to fix the problem that we have in maternal health care, and I want to be an ally, and I care about this, and you know, they've got. You know, a Black mm-hmm. Lives Matter sign in their front yard or whatever it might be. But when you actually just dive a little bit deeper into their life and you begin to find out like who's around their kitchen table and who comes to their house when they have parties or, you know, Thanksgiving mm-hmm. or whatever dinner, it's all mm-hmm. people just like them. There's no diversity there. And that is like a really, you know, good telltale sign of whether or not you are what you're preaching. And so there's a difference between intention and who you actually mm-hmm. are. And it's okay mm-hmm. that your intentions don't match who you are, but don't confuse intentions with who you actually are, you know? And that's okay that you're on the journey, you know, mm-hmm. say, you know, I don't have a large community of Black or Latina or whatever it might be, midwives or friends at this point in my life. But there has to come a point where you say, I've got to step outside of the community I'm in, even if it is all white allies, but to find mm-hmm. community among people who are different than me. And that will actually morph me into who I want to be and not just make it an right. intention. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to live out.
You're doing it. I know you're doing it. Like, I know you're holding yourself to that standard too, which is also very important. I think that some people don't even hold themselves to that standard. They think, you know, because I write ally next to something that I say right. about myself, or I put the sign up in my mm-hmm. yard, then I am that. And I think the fact right. that you just
you can still be equally ignorant yeah. and just have a sign in your yard.
Yeah. yeah. And I think that exactly. because you say to yourself, you know, I'm holding myself to the standard and I'm challenging myself to be and do and become mm-hmm. better. It's evident.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. Okay. So
it's been a lot of work.
Okay. Yeah. You want to say a little bit about that? Sorry. I didn't want to cut you off.
No, I'm just reflecting. It's been a lot.
And it's okay. Like for you to say it's been a lot of work and it's mm-hmm. not maybe exactly where you want it to be yet, and to give yourself lots of grace. Mm-hmm. I mean that's how I view it as a Black woman. When I see someone who's doing the work and maybe they're not all the way there, they're not even anywhere near where, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is that their goal is, but if I see that it's a true intention that they are living out and it's mm-hmm. constantly something that they're doing, I have a lot of respect for that because that's not easy. Right. And, you know, mm-hmm. you may not be experiencing racism in the same way that a Black woman is, but I think you're experiencing some of that stress of what it's like to just try and always cross the aisle, or, you know, right. extend a hand of like friendship and in a genuine yeah. way, like, and you're not pushing it in this, you know, forced manner of, you know, come to my gathering specifically for the Black people, like you're realizing, right. no, I have to step outside of my world. Like that,
right.
that's really respectable.
And it's like, I'm not always going to do it right. Like, and that sucks, but also that's the point.
Exactly.
Like none of us are always going to do things right. It's not about doing things exactly. right. It's about where your heart is. And, you know, I'm constantly like, hey, can you teach me about this? Or, mm-hmm. hey, is this offensive? Or, and then I hear things and I'm like, do I do that? Oh my gosh, let me think that through. Like, because I grew up in a white community. Like, I've been taught things that shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And you have to unlearn things, and you have to realize that things are maybe not what they should be. And anyway, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really good.
We always talk about this.
We do.
So back to midwifery.
Back to midwifery. No,
it's probably my fault. Anyway.
No, I don't mind. Like, really, I guess when I feel like, again, it's coming from a genuine place. It's not simply someone, and I know I've said it like 3 times, the word ally, or 4 times, 5 times. But when I feel like it's not someone just saying, I'm an ally, but they're really like trying to discover about me or about other people that they supposedly are trying to serve, I think that's really wonderful. I think that that's, that makes me want to have the conversation with you. When I feel like someone just comes to me and they just start spewing off all the latest terms that
facts,
they've heard.
Right.
Yeah, or facts. Mm-hmm. And then they're not really listening. They're just trying to, like, let me know how woke they are or how, like,
right.
That is just hard for me to open up to. And I won't say that I get angry, because I understand it's, again, coming from a very genuine place, but it's definitely not the person I open up to. And I will tell you, because I realize you already think you know.
Right. Exactly. And I want to say that it's really valuable to me that I have friends that are women of color that I can be open with, and not, like, I'm not afraid that you're, not that I'm going to offend you, because I don't ever want to offend you, but I'm not feeling like you're not going to give me grace. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it means a lot that I can have friends that I can say, hey, I think I might have totally been off course. Can you teach me something or whatever? Yeah, you know what I mean?
I do. Absolutely.
Anyway. Midwifery.
Okay, let's talk more about your center that you're opening. So I want to hear a bit more about Birth and Wellness Center of Arlington. I want to know a bit about what it was like for you to transition. Like, we're going to talk about that major hurdle. I don't know if you want to talk about it.
Uh-huh. What?
When you're finished your prep process and you needed to get everything turned in.
Oh, gosh.
We might talk about that if you feel like it at the end. But first, I want to hear.
No, it's fine. I lost all of my paperwork.
Don't tell it. Yeah, don't tell it. Don't spill
the. There we go.
Okay, tell me what it was like to transition, like leaving Washington, going back to Texas, and finding where you are currently pretty much launching Birth and Wellness of Arlington. Like, tell us how you found it, and then what the process has been like over the last few months. And you guys are launching soon, right? You
have
your grand opening
are.
Coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. On the 23rd of February. Anyone
like
in
4 days.
Area.
Yes.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the whole process of getting there, and then we'll chat about the launch.
So moving was awesome. Just like moving normally is stressful and whatever, but I definitely had some like reverse culture shock type experiences, just getting back to the way that midwifery is here. And it wasn't hard. Like, I feel like the community here really welcomed me back, just like they had when I was here. And I didn't feel like I missed any beats in my relationships with the midwives that are supportive. So that was really nice. As far as finding the center, I started looking for a place over a year before I moved back. So I moved back in April of 2018, and I started looking for a place in like February of 2017. Mm-hmm. So it was quite the process. And really, like, it wasn't adamantly looking. The last 6 months, I would say that I was like on LoopNet every day looking at what was available. And, you know, so then I moved back. I got a realtor at the beginning of the summer, and then in July I had found this place Everywhere we went, it was just like, oh, the plumbing's not in the right spot. Like, it's really hard to find a building that is anywhere near being a birth center. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, birth centers are like homes. And at least here, the majority of birth centers are like homes, but they're commercial. And that's just not common. And so I had driven past this building several times, and you know, there's a business sign out front, no for sale, no for lease signs or anything, but it was always, the parking lot was empty and vacant. And so I drove past like different days, different times of the day, nothing. I asked my realtor to call. He thought I was being crazy, so he didn't. I asked him to call again, and he didn't. So eventually, I looked up online, like, the appraisal district website, who owned it, and I contacted him. And it had been vacant for 5 years, and he really wasn't, like, he was really apathetic about the whole thing. And so that day, I went and toured it, like, the same day that I called him. I met him up there on his lunch break, and we walked through the building, and he was like, yeah, you can rent it. Like, it's the cheapest rent that I found in the city. And
oh my goodness.
It's right across the street from a hospital. It's like, really, like, what? If you look at my list. Yeah. If you look at my list of everything that I wanted in the birth center, it has every single thing. So.
Oh my goodness.
It's really awesome. The city's been really hellish to deal with. So I found the building in July of last year. We didn't sign a lease until October 1st because they were too busy trying to figure out what a birth center was. And they were trying like, to.
How do you tell awful. Them that this is a place that I want people to have babies? Can you share a little bit about that? Like, how do you even begin to introduce that to the city? It's not like just going to get a business license and saying, I'm going to sell some t-shirts, you know?
Yeah, it was. Sitting in a room of what you feel like is just a group of misogynistic upper, you know, 50s white men that don't really know anything about birth except for what it was like 50 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was complicated. And I mean, as a midwife, you're used to educating people about, you know, what you do. And, but it was like way far beyond that. It wasn't just like, let me tell you what I do. It was like, they were arguing with me about how I check someone's pulse if I don't have a machine that I plug in.
And that
I, yeah, right. And that this is like, I could go on and on. They were trying to give me like a certain grade of electricity, like I needed some really high grade of electricity because of all of the equipment that I have to plug in. And I'm like, really, the only thing I could think of that I plug in is a hot pad, like a heating pad. And their minds were blown. They're like, how do you check someone's blood pressure if you're not plugging something in?
You're like, where are the real people I need to speak to? Because you clearly know nothing.
But it was like everyone, every person was like that.
Of course. Yeah.
There were two people that I met that even knew that out of hospital birth was a thing. Which, I mean, part of that is that most of the people that work for the city are not of childbearing age. So, you know, it's the new hip thing. It's progressive. They're not progressive. So,
the other midwives there, are they doing primarily home birth then, not in a birth center?
No. And talking to other birth centers, like no one has had to jump through the hoops I've had to jump through, which I knew going into it. Like everyone says that Arlington is the hardest city to start a business in. And now I know that they all meant it. So, you know, now we're mid-February and I'm still not open. I was supposed to be open December 31st, and then I was supposed to be open January 15th, and then I was supposed to be open February 4th, and now we're February 20th or 19th.
Your site says 23rd.
Mm-hmm. I should be. I passed two different inspections today, and I should be getting my certificate of occupancy tomorrow.
Okay. So what are you guys doing for the grand opening?
Right? It's in 2 days. it's going to be cool. I mean, it's supposed to storm all week, so that's going to suck. Hopefully it's sunny, but most of the stuff we have planned is outside, so that'll be fun. We have a food truck coming, and we have some yard games, which I feel like might not be a thing there. Is it? Like cornhole and stuff like that?
My husband plays cornhole, but that's because we lived in Buffalo, so I don't know if that's a Pacific Northwest thing, though.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's not a Seattle thing. It's probably an outside of Seattle thing. Mm-hmm. adult beverages and hanging out and desserts from local bakeries and a food truck from a local lady that contributes to cystic fibrosis research. And it's a vegan food truck, so
you're just setting the precedent.
Texas, right? Texas barbecue eaters are really going to struggle with that. But
you're like, what the frick?
I know.
Not what I came for.
I gave this. Oh man, I should. Whatever. I gave this tamale from the food truck to my contractor, and he was like, "That's so good. That's the best tamale ever." He's like really raving about it. He came back later and even asked where I got it from. Like, he was really ecstatic about this bean and corn tamale that I gave him. And so then I was like, oh, it's from a food truck. It's a vegan place. His face dropped and he was like, yeah, it's all right.
he's like turning around and sticking his finger down his throat. No.
Yep. Yep. I'm like, I'm sorry. It's not the most conservative food truck, I guess. I don't know. Anyway.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be fun.
Tell me some things. Like, how many clients will you be taking per month? Will you be splitting call between the three midwives? What will that be like?
We each have our own individual practices. I'm still trying to navigate, like, how many Medicaid clients I can take versus how many paid clients I can take, and, like, you know, how to balance all of that and then also run a birth center. They take, you know, 3 to 4 months. But they both have really busy lives too. So there's going to be another midwife joining us, hopefully pretty soon. And she's going to take 5, I think is her goal. Okay. So, yeah. I'll take as many as I can, I guess, but financially, I need to figure out how to balance that.
And will you be doing home birth as well, or just birth into birth?
I'll be doing home birth.
Okay.
Yeah. I have one person that's a home birther right now.
And what towns are you serving?
The one that I have currently is going to birth in Keller, Fort Worth area. So like North Fort Worth. But really like anywhere that's in a 20-mile radius of here. So that's a vast majority. Like, I don't want to go North Dallas because I don't have time to drive up there, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And do you have, like, midwife's assistants that'll be working with you, birth assistants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm setting it up to where you have to have privileges as an assistant, which is, like, not a thing here. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting. But so midwives, RNs, or paramedics, you know, or anybody else that wants to apply and is approved, but a licensed healthcare professional on some level, mm-hmm. Are going to be birth assistants. So at every birth, there has to be one other person with you that's approved.
Okay. Awesome. And so do you do consultations, like if someone's interested in having a birth with Birth and Wellness Center of Arlington, but, you know, they don't know much about out-of-hospital birth, or they just want to get to know you, do you do consultations?
Yeah, they're free. Most of my people actually sign up for their consultations on the website, something that I set up. It's pretty cool. They don't even have to call, which is like what most people do these days. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have a lot of people come in and ask questions and want to see the place.
Perfect. I'm just looking through your site right now, and I see you have the childbirth education classes. You have links for a couple of doulas in the area. Are those just doulas that you recommend and people can hire in addition to the midwifery services? Okay.
Yeah.
You've got birth photographers. You've got a lot of cool things. So birthandwellnesscenter.com is your website. So if people want to go there and find. Where else are you guys online?
We're on Instagram. Our handle is @BirthArlington. And then on Facebook as well. The handle is the same, @BirthArlington. So those are our two outlets right now. I think there's a Twitter account somewhere. It's not being used.
What's the best way for someone to connect with you? Is it through your website, through email?
Yeah, the website sends you, well, really any of it. I think that the website connects to our emails, and I think that that is the fastest way to get a response right now.
Okay.
Just while we're opening and everything. Been busy, so it's like I have to keep up with my email because the city also emails me, you know. And
yeah, okay.
But yeah, anything through the website just goes straight to the email. So that's cool.
Okay. Before we go, tell us what happened after you finished your whole PEP process. So you just tell them, you tell everybody what happened, and then we'll do a little
So the PEP process is keeping record of every appointment and birth and skill. There's like literally 40 pages of skills. So you have to keep track of all of it. So it's like, you know, 500 appointments and 100 plus births or something crazy. And so I got all of it done. I kept up with all this paperwork for 4 years that so many different midwives had signed off. I'm feeling sick talking about it.
It made me sick when you told me. My stomach was hurting so bad.
So many midwives had signed off on it, and I attended my very last birth, and my preceptor signed off on it, and I even took a picture of it in my car and sent it to one of the midwives I'm going to work with, and I was like, look at this, I finished. And that was the very last time that that book was ever seen.
It's so not funny.
It is now.
Heck is it?
Okay, so actually it was found like several months later. Randomly, and I lived with my sister at the time and her family. And it was like months later.
Yeah, because there was a major, like when you told me this, you were in like a major crisis mode.
Yeah, like I filled all the paperwork out again, got it all submitted, it was all approved, I took my test, and then it was found. And she found it like in a suitcase that I had never used. It was one of their suitcases, and it was just in their suitcase. Oh, so no idea what happened there. I lived with a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, so there's no telling, but my preceptor in Washington graciously signed off on everything, all again, every skill, even the skills that other midwives had signed off on, she signed off on all of them, and she didn't complain once.
Oh.
There's a special spot in heaven for her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. So.
It was crisis mode for a bit there. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I probably would have pulled my hair out.
It was bad because I like came home for Christmas. My last birth was December 17th of 2017, and I flew home for Christmas. Didn't tell my mom I was coming. She didn't even know I'd finished my last birth, and I was here in Texas, and I was thinking, I didn't see my binder before I left. It must be in my car. And I'm like thinking the whole time. And I think I even called my sister and was like, will you look in my car and make sure my binder's there? And it wasn't there. And I was, you know, just like, well, it's home. Like, not going to worry about it. Can't do anything. Got back. It wasn't there. It was gone. So, yeah.
I'm glad you got it all taken care of and you were able to take your test.
Yes. It was quite the journey.
Okay, one last thing before you finish up. Tell me three things you're loving. Totally, you know, they don't have to be related to midwifery at all. There's some food that you're loving, music, like a new song, restaurant, pair of pants. Tell me three things you're loving.
Sleep, like literally, that is one thing. Like I'm really loving being in my bed right now because it doesn't happen very often. And I've been treading the deep end for some time with this whole building process. And like a lot of times when I sleep, I'm like dreaming stressful things. So like if I get a good night's sleep right now, it's like the best thing that could possibly happen to me. Mm-hmm. I like having short hair. That's been pretty cool. Cut my hair off.
Yeah, you cut it. It looks so cute.
Thanks. I feel like opening the birth center. Well, I don't feel like this. This is reality. Opening the birth center has introduced me to a whole new community of people and like some birth workers, some not birth workers, and just this whole other level of knowledge. Like, I didn't know what all this meant, you know, like building wise and construction wise. And like, now I know like what the different shades of grout are that I want in my kitchen. Like it's like things that I never completely not midwifery related at all.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have ever gotten to experience if I hadn't decided to do this. So I'm appreciating that right now.
That's a wonderful skill to have. Or to experience to have experienced.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you, Meredith.
Yeah. Thanks for talking and for thinking of me.
Yeah. Enjoy your sleep. I know it's late now.
Oh, I will. I'm going to go sleep now.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the American Midwife Series with me, your host, Angelica Malone. I'll be back soon with another funny, insightful, and real conversation with a midwife. If you'd like to connect with me and see the other projects of mine, like my blog, my book, Milk Boss 101, or purchase my Nourishing Woman's Herbal Tea, head on over to my website, angelicamalone.com. That's AngelicaMalone.com. You can also connect with me on Instagram. My username is at Angelica Malone. And don't forget, if you are a midwife or you know of a midwife I should chat with here on the American Midwife Series, please email me at hello@angelicamalone.com. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Bye.